Looking for new threads? Well, we've got you covered at the Music Is Live podcast official merch store over at tpublic.com. Whether it's t-shirts, baseball tees, hoodies, coffee mugs, travel mugs, phone cases, or onesies for your infant rockers and metalheads, you can find everything you're looking for over at the Music Is Live podcast merch store at tpublic. Go to my link tree at linktr.ee/musicislivepodcast and get your merch today. Buy my stuff, and thanks for your support. Terranut is proud to offer you a natural nut bar chock full of healthy fats, minerals, and protein that meet your demands. Go to their website, www.terranut.com. You can order from them directly, and they will ship it to you. Use my coupon code, LUMAVS, and you will get a 25% discount on your first order. Terranut Superfood Snacks, www.terranut.com. Don't forget to use coupon code, LUMAVS, at checkout. Fuel your life.
Severed Angel, the deluxe edition of the self-titled debut album, available now. Pick up your copy today over at severedangel.com. Available on all streaming media platforms. Severed Angel, get ready to ride the dogs of war.
You're listening to the Music Is Life podcast with your host, Lou Mavs, on the Rat Salad Review Network. All right, we are now going to discuss the, well, not discuss, we're going to listen to and give our opinions of the Buddy Rich tapes. Now, James, could you provide a little context into the Buddy Rich tapes?
Isn't this pretty much where he starts shooting on country music and pretty much cutting an absolute promo on the state of country music and how simple it is?
Oh no, we already did that. Like when we first discussed them, I posted that whole interview. No, this is the stuff where apparently they got information. They got quote. They used quotes from it for Seinfeld.
Oh. I have never heard this one before.
You've never heard these tapes before?
No.
He is basically verbally eviscerating his band.
Oh, yes. I have never heard this. However, I have been verbally eviscerated by several band directors in my life, a la Whiplash.
As have I, but James, trust me, I don't think whatever they told you or whatever they told me compares to this. But apparently, if you're a fan of the show Seinfeld, you'll actually hear some of the quotes that they've used in these diatribes.
Ah.
So why don't we go ahead and get to the tapes? So now we're going to play the Buddy Rich tapes, and we'll give our opinion on it.
Panic!
You think I don't know what's gonna work up there? Well, you motherfuckers sit out there and clam all over this fucking joint.
If anyone doesn't know what a clam is a bad note.
What kind of play do you think this is? What kind of miscues do you call this? What fucking play do you think you're playing on, motherfuckers? You wanna fuck with me on a bandstand? Shut that fucking door. I'm up there working my balls off, trying to do somebody a favor, and you motherfuckers are sucking all over this joint. What kind of trumpet section do you call us tonight? It's saxophones? You gotta fucking be kidding me! How dare you call yourselves professional? Assholes are playing like fucking children up there.
Ye gad.
You got your fucking, where the fuck are you? This one. You got your fucking horn so far deep in the fucking bell. We don't need to have a band here tonight. Your phrasing will be heard. Everybody can hear your fucking clams out there. You don't need a mic for that. You taking up too much fucking time? Blowing what?
How would they be too drunk to, like,
stand
hear the notes?
Stand out here all fucking night trying to blow your fucking brains out when I come trying to play. What do you play? Clams? You got nowhere to fucking go to the next day. Because if I hear one fucking clam from anybody, you've had it. One clam and this whole fucking band is through tonight. Try me. you got some fucking nerve. Nights off, nothing to do, and you come in and play this kind of shit for me? Fuck all of you. You're not doing me any fucking favors. You're breaking my heart up there.
Yeah, you can tell he's a very caring person.
You motherfuckers, I play with the greatest fucking musicians in the world. How dare you play like that for me?
He hasn't played with me.
How dare you try to play like that for me? Assholes. I get 15 fucking kids in rehearsal. The fucking time of this band is incredible. We don't play two fucking bars in one fucking tempo. Not one. You can't keep fucking time to play. There's too many things to do, isn't there? You can't patch your
isn't
fucking foot
and
play.
What's this at?
You're all over the fucking place.
Isn't it the drums job to keep time?
You try one fuck up the next day.
You would think.
And when you get back to the office, you'll need another fucking job. Count on it. Get out of my fucking bus.
Wow, and that's not the end of it. There's more.
So.
Hey, you play a fucking set like that.
Here we go.
This one of the fucking players become the leader of this fucking band and decide how long they're going to hold it for. What the fuck do you think you're doing? You think you're playing with some shit up there? I expect 110% fucking perfection every fucking tune. You got that? And if you can't do it, get off my fucking band tonight. A day off yesterday, and you come back like this, and you suck! What the fuck kind of music do you think you're playing here, anyhow? And who do you think you're playing for? You think I tolerate that shit? You're worse than any fucking high school band I ever heard!
Well, at least he's giving high school bands credit.
I don't know what kind of drummers you think you're playing with, but you'll play with me, or you'll get out!
Oh,
how dare
geez.
You do that?
Damn.
Assholes. You can't play a simple fucking song. You can't hold a chord. You can't play time when you play solo. What kind of fools am I hearing tonight?
Such a ray of sunshine that Buddy Rich was, wasn't he?
He is a treat.
Over here, you play time. You don't like what I play? Get the fuck out. I'm tired of putting up with you. I'm tired of signing for you. I'm tired of you, period.
I don't know, like, fuck you, buddy. I'll go with Conway Twitty.
Exactly. Piss on this. I work for Mel Brooks.
You gotta keep fucking easy, goddammit. I'll make it so fucking tough you won't be able to breathe around here. How many fucking bands do you think you've got to go to work in? If I decide to quit, you are stuck. You got nothing.
You could tell they must have gotten so much info for George Costanza from this reel alone.
Oh, God. This is just George Costanza with a potty mouth.
I mean, Buddy had to have played a couple of clams in his life. He couldn't have been all perfect.
No, he thinks he did everything right.
But wait, there's more. I'm sorry, that toupee ain't fooling nobody.
No, it's fooling Bruno.
No time. What the fuck do you think I'm gonna do? What kind of plane do you call? What kind of shit is going on in the fuck?
Well, he's not screaming in this one, so it's not as much fun.
No, it's not. I want some fire and brimstone. I want some heat. All right, I've had my brand director, who was a drummer, by the way, tell me I don't want to hear anything coming out of my filthy fucking sewer. I mean, I've had this where I've had to do push-ups and shit, so like in high school band. So like this is delightful. This is adorable.
Oh, you've had band teachers speak to you worse than this?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
And I respect the hell out of him. Lynn Rogers was my band director at Jefferson County High School in Tennessee. And he wouldn't verbally abuse us like this, but he demanded perfection like this. And he would get so frustrated that we knew when we screwed up too much, when he would go lock himself in a room to calm down. So just take out all the F-bombs, and these are the exact phrases I've heard.
Maybe this is where I got the idea from. You know, these were released after Buddy died. He never knew these recordings were done, I think.
Well, I mean, obviously he did not know, because he would try to protect them.
Oh, now it's getting fun.
Yep, there we go.
On the bright side, not one racist diatribe from him, just a bunch of like F-bombs.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of F-bombs and a lot of personal verbal abuse.
But wait, there's more. This was the original Hogan tape.
Yeah. I'm just sitting here like curtailing all the things that he has said that I've heard before.
I just hope he paid them well.
I mean, that is the difference. I mean, I got paid literally in hot dogs and handshakes for that stuff, and yet, you know, he's at least paying these people.
That's a definite suggestion. When you go to work tonight, if I catch the fucking beard on you, I'll throw you off the fucking band. Okay? You what? You're poo. Right now. You don't tell me what to do. I tell you. If you don't like it, get off.
Well, the name on the marquee is Buddy Rich.
Exactly.
Right now. Pull a fucking pistol. I got what? I got another for you. I got a right hand of your fucking brain if you want it. I'll give it 2 weeks. 2 weeks for what? You learn the rules of my band. You don't like it. That's it. You get off. And try to take me to the fucking union. I'd love it. I'd love it.
I mean, the tape is probably muffled because it's hidden in somebody's jacket pocket. That's what I'm thinking.
Definitely. I mean, he's saying these without anybody knowing he can say it and nothing's going to happen to him because it's not in writing or on audio.
And I still play your fucking shot. For you. You understand that? Not for me. I think you play my shot. Because what? Take your man. This, it is? Yes. This Jake Manhattan, and get off. I'm a success without you and without your writing. You understand that?
My nerves.
All right, but don't tell me what the best chart of my book is.
Well, it certainly got over the best.
It goes over the best?
Sure, it does. People are sure.
Go back to Sydney. And whatever you do over there, good luck. Not over here.
I think he just fired a guy.
Oh, he definitely just fired a guy.
Here we go.
Keep talking. No, keep your fucking mouth shut. Right now. Or I'll close it for you. Keep it shut. Don't try me.
I didn't need to try.
Just shut up.
Well, I just appreciate, you know, being talked to you like
a human being. I try to talk to you like a human being, and you talk back all the time. Now keep your fucking mouth shut, or I'll show you what it's like.
That's from Seinfeld.
Yep.
I'm not threatening you, I'm telling you. You don't want to do what I want in my band, I'm telling you.
Okay.
Just shut up.
I will. Alright.
Yeah, there's not a lot of shutting up there. Like, he keeps saying shut up.
I want him off. I don't want him on the band. I'm going to
No, but then he did say that, you know, keep it up and I'll show you what it's like. And I was like, that's exactly what George said in the movie theater in the Opposite Day episode.
If I have to tell you again, we're going to take it outside and I'm going to show you what it's like.
Yeah, a lot of those. So the, you know, the I expect 110% every time we go out there, you know, no clams. I remember a band director literally staring me down saying, do you know how to play this piece? Or are you just acting like you don't? In the middle of everybody.
Wow.
Sat there, embarrassed a little bit, you know, a little red-assed, and then dusted myself up and played it better. Got to the point so that he pushed us so hard during the, we'd do summer, you know, pre-show workouts.
Mm-hmm.
And the junior year of high school, we were doing 70s music, and we were doing, you know, Frankenstein from Edgar Winter.
Very awesome song.
Very awesome song. Well, the brass had the guitar. So we were going to play the guitar. And he looked at us and just went, I want this loud. And so we got to this point where like our embouchures, our lips were splitting.
Oh,
from
really?
All the work. Like we were in physical pain doing these songs all day into the night to like midnight and then going to sleep and then doing it again the next day for an entire week straight. And we were just pounding it. I mean, we were doing the full runs with the guitar. We were doing everything, the entire solo.
That's got, insane. That is an insane solo from Mr. Rick Derringer.
Yes. And I do mean like that. So we would, you know, we would do the beginning where he's doing all the things and then like we would break out and then it would be the drums doing the entire drum solo. Our snare drums and everybody doing that as our drum solo, as our part where we're just marching and not playing. But yeah, we're playing the freaking chorus and everything to that thing. We're freaking, and he wanted it loud. It got so bad that I started ringing notes through the hallways of our high school. That's how loud it was.
How far did the echo go?
All the way down the school.
Oh my God.
It got so bad. Like when I did it, he turned. It went, what was that? And then he looks at it, he goes, down. He's like, all right, you've officially blown gone over. Now I have to rein you back in. So yeah, I mean, he was extremely hard taskmaster, but also was a person who would defend the students when people mm-hmm. wouldn't. This man got fired being a band director for defending one of his band students against a criticizing another teacher.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
After 40 years of being the band director, he got fired because he criticized the teacher on Facebook, defending a student who was complaining about it.
I think you mentioned that was a while ago this happened.
Yes. This is a while back. This is about 10 years ago. Yeah.
Oh, this was 10 years ago. Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I have heard those verbal eviscerations before. I mean, he would do, if you screwed up a halftime show, it would be nothing to in the middle of like on the end of the side and end zones, you know, where they have the big area where like mm-hmm. usually you have the track and field pit.
Mm-hmm.
It would be common for us to be doing push-ups in the middle of the crowd. If we screwed up something that bad.
Well, you want to be in something. If you want to belong like you're part of something.
Yeah.
Then yeah, I can understand that mentality where it's like, you know, you fuck up, you know,
yeah,
you pay a penalty.
And you know, he got it. He caught it from the Drummond Brugel choirs of DCI. He got that from the University of Tennessee, you know, Pride of the Southland. It's a thing. And he had multiple people in every single high, you know, college marching band in the area. Mm. Somebody from his band was in those bands.
Mm.
So the ETSBOA, the biggest one of the area, the region, with everybody the regional bands, we always had a handful, like 8 or 10 people in those bands.
Mm.
So we're talking, you know, out of 600 people,
out of, you know, 60, 80 schools, 10 of us were there.
Got it.
So, I mean, this, it was hard. It sucked. There were days where you're just wanting to throw stuff. You're running, you wanted to punch him a few times. even I got into his face once, and he had to like back, he had to calm it down a little bit. Cause I was just like, I'm not taking this abuse from you anymore, old man.
Oh,
you know,
I mean, I think to be good in your craft, you need discipline.
I get
and
it.
My first instrument, and I mentioned this to you, was trumpet. I told my father that I wanted to learn guitar. And he said, how bad do you want to learn a guitar? And I was like, what do you mean by that? He's like, are you willing to learn another instrument first before you pick up guitar? And I said, sure. And he said, okay, because our church, St. Demetrius, is having a Saturday orchestra band. We don't want you to go down there, you know, test it out, pick an instrument, learn that. If you get good at it, maybe I'll get you a guitar. So, you know, I picked trumpet. I wish I had picked saxophone, but I picked trumpet instead. And, you know, they started you on third trumpet. You know, they teach you hot cross buns. They teach you the scale, the B flat concert.
B flat scale.
And also the chromatic.
Yeah.
You know, how to keep maintenance of your instrument. And I realized that before I get into trumpet one, I got to pay my dues. But it got to a point where I was still third or second trumpet. Mr. Barry Dellman, one time he heard me playing clams as Barry, as Buddy Rich stated, and he pulled me aside. He said, Lou, I can't believe I'm going to say this to you, but your playing today was utter bullshit. And he's like, I can't have this in my band. And I said, Doc, all due respect, I just don't feel like applying myself if like I'm forever going to be the third or second trumpet. And like, these guys are really good, but it's like, I'll never have my chance to like grow. And I'm kind of thinking, I'm like, ooh, did I just make a mistake saying that?
No, you didn't.
Well, he saw that I was upset, and he figured out, why don't you take the baritone horn?
Yep.
And I was like, what's the baritone horn? And he pointed at it. I'm like, that thing? And, you know, and he said, yeah, it's the same keys as trumpet. Same, you know, same.
Well, this is the same as the euphonium player. Absolutely. So I did the same thing. So
I picked it up, and all of a sudden it's like, I found my instrument.
Yep.
And, you know, this was 2 years after picking up trumpet, and I played it for like about 9 years straight. And I loved it because I was like, finally, I get to have an instrument that I'm known for.
This is your thing. Yeah.
And, you know, he was so good at like turning, you know, chicken shit into chicken feed. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. he was so good at that. Him and my high school music teacher, Dr. Daniel Burwasser, were probably the two music teachers that I learned the most from. And like, I still apply like their disciplinary tactics to me playing the guitar, because, you know, you've heard the Severed Angel album.
Yes.
Playing those parts and practicing them in case of the one time we ever do make it to stage, it's not easy. So, you know, you have to keep your chops up. You have to keep up your conditioning to be able to play that stuff. I had one teacher, though, in middle school. He said, all right, everybody, play a C, B flat concert, C. That was great. I'm like, we didn't even tune. He's like, all right, let's go to the first song. And I'm like, you know, that's when I realized, I feel like public school in New York City at the time was just a way to pass you through just to get you out of middle school.
Yeah, absolutely. You
know? And
so like for me, I had a very similar path, obviously. Mm-hmm. Mine actually happened in eighth grade is when I realized I was never going to progress as a trumpet player and moved to the baritone. Mm-hmm. And then, so what made me realize I was going to be good at it was hearing a judge actually comment saying, okay, you found something with that kid with the baritone. You found something with that kid.
Mm-hmm.
Work on that, you know, because it was a lot of, you know, just because it was a middle school band, we're all going to sound like crap, you know, but we're going to try our best. And he's trying to pick all the things out. And then I get to Tennessee and I'm starting right back where I was. I was first chair in Nevada, straight to third chair in East Tennessee.
My story, when I went to college, when I went to St. John's University, I auditioned for the pep band. I choked with the baritone horn. And I was so disappointed in myself. I said, you know what? After I graduate high school, I'm never picking up an instrument again. Like, that's how much it got to me, because I feel like I let Dr. Delman and Dr. Burwasser down, you know? And if anyone I grew up with is watching this and is laughing at it, you got to understand that these two guys were like my mentors, you know? So like them and my brother, like those are like the three men in my life who were the most instrumental in me, you know, trying to shape myself into becoming not just a good musician, but just constantly getting better. And, you know, it was a freak accident. And I hadn't played guitar that entire summer. And then I went on a campus ministry retreat my freshman year. Somebody left a nylon string on the acoustic. Somebody left a nylon string acoustic on the piano. And I just picked it up and I started playing it. And then all of a sudden, like, one person started coming to me. Two people started coming to me. 10 people started coming to me. And they were like, can you play this?
Yeah.
And I was like, how am I doing this right now? You know, like normally I get stage fright or I get shy, but it's like for the first time in a long time, it's like I'm playing for myself now.
Exactly.
So it's like all of a sudden it's like I achieved like this, to quote Bill Murray in Caddyshack, I achieved total consciousness or something like that. You know, and I'm sorry, I'm almost wrapped up with the story. So, you know, I was jamming with these kids and whatever. And then all of a sudden my buddy, Jason Crawford, said, hey, you know, then this was my last semester of my senior year. And he said, you know, we need a baritone horn player for the jazz band. And I was like, oh, what do I get out of it? He's like, oh, you got a grant. I said, oh, okay, I'll do it. So I got a nice little check in the mail and that was pretty cool. So I was playing baritone horn again, sole guy there. You know, we had some great stuff that we were playing. Then all of a sudden, senior concert comes. The guitar player, no shows. Just no shows. I had my Les Paul up in the college radio station, because sometimes I brought it over and I would just like, you know, jam stuff with friends of mine. And Mr. Motley was his name, Bill Motley, great, great conductor. Was like, you know, we need a guitar player. And then all of a sudden Jay Crawford's like, Lou's got his guitar up in the radio station. And I'm like, dude, what the fuck are you doing? I didn't practice the songs on guitar. And he's like, you could transfer it. I'm like, oh no. And Mr. Motley's like, can you play? I said, yes, sir, I could play this stuff. He's like, then go get it, boy. Go get it. And ran up the stairs. I almost hit my friend Carrie Olson. I'm sorry, Carrie, almost bulldozed you. I'm sorry. I love you. Anyway, so I ran into the radio station, grabbed my guitar, went back down, did a quick tune, set it up and everything. And then all of a sudden it's like, you know, we break into Sing 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 and you know, a bunch of other stuff. And he gives me two solos at the end of the concert. It's like, Lou, these solos are yours. And one of them was Smooth by Santana.
Oh, gosh.
Now, I'm not a Santana fan. I prefer the Abraxas album more than, you know, the Supernatural album. I think anybody with a brain cell would. But
I mean, I still enjoy Supernatural.
That's fine, but I prefer Abraxas. So all of a sudden he's like, all right, Lou, your turn. So like, you know, I knew the song and I knew the data, you know, the noodle parts.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I break into a solo and like, I'm only supposed to get like four measures, you know, of the break. And Mr. Motley's like, keep going. I'm like, huh? I'm like, I just keep going. And then all of a sudden he doesn't stop me. I'm like, don't you want to get to the saxophone player? He's like, keep playing, boy. And I'm like, okay, I'm not fucking with this dude right now. So yeah, it's Needless to say, that brought me back to stage.
The biggest thing I remember from Dr. Glenn Rogers for me was actually every time you were doing interviews with all the band directors, he had the most outlandish way to recuse himself.
And what way was this?
He would literally sit when he would go, we'd sit down in the interview. Of course, we're wearing our goofy band uniforms that look like red coats from the British Army. We sit down and he just does this.
Hand in head in hand.
Just.
Okay.
Just sits there like that. Starts looking at all the other band directors dead in the eyes. Uh-huh. He's doing that. He's not doing that to me. He's doing that to everybody else except for me. Of course, I also felt like he's probably doing that because he knew I got no problem public speaking ever.
Mm.
You know, I was never the shy butter. You know, I was always the peacock ready to fly. So he just knew, just put the kid down in the seat and let him go. Just unleash this kid. I found him 3 years ago. Just let him go. Just let him go.
No, but I will say this. I don't think it's a bad thing to be a hard ass in music, because sometimes you have to be, you know, when you're performing. And look, I mean, art is subjective, but playing the piece, you know, either do it right or don't do it at all.
Exactly.
You know, there's a reason why certain songs are set to the beats per minute that they are. There's a reason why it's important to make sure that you're in tune every time you play. And don't get me wrong, man, I love punk rock. You know, I love Helter Skelter by the Beatles. That song is way out of tune. You know, when a song is being released as a statement, that's one thing. But when you're playing a composition and your stuff isn't up to par to where it should be, and you still go on stage like it's no big deal, I kind of can't respect that. And, you know, if people are like, you know, oh, well, it's easy for you to say, I'm like, yeah, it is easy for me to say because I put that standard on myself. Yeah. You know, I have Dr. Delman and Dr. Verwasser and my late brother Mike to made me appreciate the fact that being on stage is a privilege. Exactly. Being able to learn an instrument is not a birthright. You know, show that you could do it or get the fuck off stage.
The fun part about that was, yes, performing and being in the performance is the gift, is what you've worked hard for. That is the gift. The funniest, I'll remember every time I was on, you know, out competing on the field, some of the goofy stuff that happened that they just nobody noticed except for me and him. Mm-hmm. That was it. Nobody knew, like, hey, like one time I remember I took a step back. Because we were going, you know, I was doing like a 30-yard freaking movement, that ball, that phrase.
Mm-hmm.
And I took my first step and I sunk into mud.
Ah.
And I had to catch up. Or when I had to bulldoze a guy, during the parades, these guys with these stupid junk carts were out there trying to sell crud to kids. And we were told, freaking run them over. Mm. If they're in your way, take them out. And I did this thing. I played. I tucked the horn, shoulder charged it into the third row of the cart. It just popped right back up like it was nothing.
I've had to Elka Bong some people.
Yeah,
I'm not proud of it, but I'm not ashamed to admit it. But it had to be done.
The funniest one was one of the flag girls would this one part of the show would do a acrobatic routine. She was a gymnast and an acrobat.
Mm.
And for some reason, our second competition show, she, and you can hear that even the judge goes, oh, she's rolling up on the guy, and he just kicked her right up. She rolled up right on my foot perfectly, that I just did one little quick kick to fly her back up in the air. Do her little spin.
Oh my goodness.
Some of that stuff. And he's like, what was your thought process in that situation? She was on my foot.
There you go. So I guess in hindsight, you know, although it's hilarious listening to Buddy Rich curse like a sailor against
chew somebody out. Yeah.
To chew someone out. It was cannibalism, sir. Okay.
He digested I mean, you know, he just left a little less on the bone than some others have. Okay. I mean, I've joked. I've been yelled at by the best of them. Ain't nothing going to faze me in this world.
But yeah, I hear you. But I will say this. I mean, you know, for his caliber of performance, you know, regardless of how I feel about him because of opinions on music outside of jazz, which I incredibly disagree with him on, I'm not going to deny his importance in the world of music and how he shaped drummers that came after him. You know, Neil Peart, Peter Chris, and even Carmine Appice, a piece, as he likes to call himself, you know, referenced Buddy Rich as an influence. The man was a legend, and it is a legend. And, you know, if he wanted the best out of him, out of his band, because that's what he expected out of himself, I can't blame him.
I can't either, especially when you say the results speak for themselves. I mean, obviously, if he was going out there playing like shit and he was ripping the other people for playing correctly, then, you know, that'd be one thing. But if he's holding himself to that standard and they're not holding themselves to that standard and they're calling themselves professionals, that's the biggest insult to that world I've ever seen.
Yeah. You
know, I've never confused myself with being a professional musician. I never will. My skills stopped at high school. However, I could still to this day, when somebody, you know, marches out of formation or plays a freaking note wrong and plays a clam, you're damn right, I'm going to hear that thing from a mile away and go, you know, and hear the 911 chants, you know, right. Here it comes. Cause I mean, you know, you might've fooled the rest of this world about getting paid for this gig, but you're not going to fool me.
That was a situation that I found myself in with my previous cover band, Hard Drive. Even in its initial formation as Shockwave, the guitarist that was in the band didn't understand proper usage of an amplifier or how to use the pickup switch, you know, keep it on the treble for a rhythm, switch to the neck pickup for solos. He would do it in reverse. And, you know, one time I actually modified his amp so that it sounded just right. And he completely screwed it up again by touching it after I was done, to the point where it's like, you couldn't hear my bass.
Yeah.
You know, and the drummer couldn't keep time if you put a metronome next to him.
Mm.
You know,
here comes Dr. Beat for me. That was the most egregious sin we could ever commit.
So when the guitarist quit because of a disagreement on something with the drummer, I got suckered into playing the guitar again. And mind you, I was on vacation that week. That Monday, I'm in front of the Stone Pony in Asbury Park with my wife. I get a phone call. Lou, the guitarist quit. Can you play guitar this weekend? And I was like, this is a hell of a time to ask me. But I said, sure, I will. So mind you, I'm on vacation. I'm getting text messages and phone calls every day from these guys. And I'm just like, guys, I'm on vacation. Leave me alone here. So, you know, Friday we come back. I do the show. Goes off without a hitch. And I'm thinking, all right, maybe this is the piece that we needed. Me on guitar with my buddy Doc Reinhardt on bass. And that's when we switched the name to Hard Drive. And for 2.5-3 years, right until the time COVID occurred, we were doing 2 to 3 shows a week. And I was playing a Les Paul, switched to Strats because the amount of shows that we were doing was killing my back.
Yeah.
You know, because Les Pauls are much heavier than Strats. But every time we had rehearsal, it was like the drummer didn't know the song. Every time we went on stage, the drummer couldn't keep time. So it just got to a point where I just said, you know what? I'm only making like $100 a gig. Like, I realize this is a hobby at this point, but I'd rather play with people who know how to play and not get paid than have to subjugate myself to this crap.
And now you just have a drummer who can keep time. He just can't keep his mouth shut. No, I'm kidding.
If Wayne can hear you, he can keep time.
It's a joke.
Yeah. But anyway,
got to break the boss's balls a little bit, you know.
That's right. But anyways, we're gonna wrap it up. I'm glad that we got to talk some wrestling, and we got to do the Buddy Rich tapes. It was a fun listen, and hearing us talk about our high school band stories. You know, it was fun for us. We hope it was fun for you.
The old war stories, they're the best.
Yeah. James, you got anything you want to plug?
Just everybody, follow the Saturdays in the Fall Facebook page and the YouTube page. We're doing our best to do two shows a week. Sometimes the days aren't always figuring out. We're the same as Rat Salad right now until hopefully soon. You know, this, it's still a hobby. We're not getting paid to do it. So we're having trouble trying to navigate life and, you know, everything else going on in the world. So, but it's a good football podcast. We do college football all year round. We enjoy talking, even during the, what everyone else calls the off season. We do not call it that. We just call it talking season and actual during the games. So, just follow that and then, enjoy a Rat Salad Review, especially when I have to change scenery back here away from the mountains and go more to the rolling hills.
There you go. And we're actually going to come back to Rat Salad Review on the 27th of September, where we're going to be talking with Steve Rosen, who wrote a book called Tone Chaser about the late, great Eddie Van Halen. So we're excited about that. Then afterwards, for Sweeps Months, we're going to be talking the Ozzy discography and the Kiss discography. Then I guess eventually one day for Manny, we'll do the Alice discography, but that's going to take forever.
we're saying this as you know, Ozzy has an extensive discography of like what, like six songs or six albums.
Ozzy's got 13.
Oh God. Yeah, it's true.
And Kiss has, I lost count.
Kiss has too many. That one's going to hurt. Now, will the person who did this idea actually be in half the shows?
I better. You know, with the Kiss ones, it's like, you know, you may have to do three albums a week, but thankfully they're all a half hour or less.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, they're not that long. I mean, you know, they don't do what is it, Rime of the Ancient Mariner type songs.
James is not going to forgive us for doing Iron Maiden versus Judas Priest.
Ever. Never. You will never, ever, ever stop me from that. Okay. I suffered through a lot of that.
It was not my bag. That's okay.
Not my bag. I admitted it. I did my best, and I was as objective as possible.
Thankfully, I can meet you halfway on similar musical tastes. So that's a good thing.
Exactly. I didn't expect mine to be great, but anyway, let me stop the Irish goodbye because it's late.
It is. James Lilquist from Rat Salad Review and from Saturdays in the Fall. Thanks for coming on Music is Life podcast. If you want to find out more about the podcast, check us out over on my link tree. That's Music is Life podcast. And also check out the mothership, if you will, Rat Salad Review over at ratsaladreview.com. We are 200 hours away from monetization. Make it happen.
Yeah, James Lilquist. Because we want to make major motion pictures, baby.
That's right, baby. If you will. And please, let us will. Anyways, James Lilquist, thanks for coming on the show. And remember, all art is valid, including wrestling and Buddy Rich diatribes. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the Music is Life podcast, brought to you by Anchor.fm and Rat Salad Review. Check out the other shows on Rat Salad Review, including Beyond Bushido, Old Man Metal's Musings, The Right Opinion, The Vieira Vault, The Timo Toki podcast, The BS Sessions with Mark and Jerry, Just the Cheese Please, and the Friday Night Party with the great Harry Barnett and Evie. Graphics by Rocky Baia. For commissions, find them on Twitter at @ROCKYBAIA. Intro and outro music for the show is Lose Control by The Rebel Medium, written by Jacqueline Guittard, Ernest Layug, and Lou Mavs. If you'd like to donate to the channel, please donate to our PayPal at musicislifepodcast@gmail.com. If you're in a band and you want us to review your music, then contact us at loumavs@musicislifepodcast.com. Special thanks to Wayne Noon and Greg Noggle. With much love and gratitude to Aaron, Anna, and Aloysius. For more information, check out www.musicislivepodcast.com. And don't forget to check out www.ratsireview.com. Remember, all art is valid. Thanks for listening. Cheers.